But we are kicking off our Christmas series that we're calling Miracles. And Christmas has got to be the best holiday. I mean, July 4th is pretty fun. What's your favorite holiday of them all? I mean, it all comes down to Christmas. So when we read through the Christmas story, it's just one miracle after another. So we want to spend the whole month of December really talking about miracles. And I hope it's going to be fun for you. I think it's going to be a blast, because I want to put on our hearts, what God's put on my heart, is living in a world where miracles are real. And it's not just when we look back on a Christmas story and say, oh, well, that was kind of a fun fairy tale land and time. But does that really happen anymore? And miracles still happen. They happen all over the place. And we want to hear stories and share stories about it. But as you look through the Christmas story, it's one miracle after another from these prophetic words from the Old Testament prophets that we just heard today, to all the angels that show up. The angel that shows up with young Mary, and just the miracle of God incarnating into human flesh, and the virgin birth miracle, the star over Bethlehem, the angel showing up to the shepherds, and as I'm going over these, I'm probably leaving out some of the miracle stories, and so I don't have them all up here, but think of them. What's that last one have to do with? And so Jesus is the escape. To Egypt, and a warning again in a dream from an angel to get out of town. Herod is after you. And so just this dramatic story from beginning to end with all these Christmas miracles. And so we want to really talk about what it means to live in a world and be in a relationship with a God who is alive and well and active in this world in supernatural ways. And so really want to warm up to the whole idea of what miracles are all about. I love this quote from everybody's favorite physicist, right? But I love how Albert Einstein put it. There are only two ways to live your life. And I think this is really true. One is as though nothing is a miracle. What a boring world that would be. The other is as though everything is a miracle. And when we look around and we're just astounded by the amazing, from the stars to the molecules that we can't even see, just how amazing our world is and how amazing our God is. Okay, this one's pretty deep. Now, we're keeping the youth in the service today, and so you guys got to hang in there with me a little bit. And we can get together later and try to figure out what the world CS is talking about here. But I've got a fun video for you guys later, and that's what makes it fun for everybody when the youth is in the service. We got a little extra special something going on. But miracles are a retelling in small letters of the very same story which is written across the whole world in letters too large for some of us to see. Ooh, deep thought. And so, what's he talking about there? I don't know. I just thought it sounded really cool and deep. So, I thought I'd throw it out there. Make us think a little bit. So, anybody read any Frederick Buechner? Incredible Christian author. I love how he puts it. A miracle is when the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. A miracle is when 1 + 1 = 1,000. It's like, how do you pull that off? Only God can pull off that kind of math. I don't know. Maybe you tried that on one of your math tests and it didn't work for you, but God could do that one. Maybe have you read any of these stories? I love it how Lemony Snicket puts it. Miracles are like pimples, because once you start looking for them, you find more than you ever dreamed you'd see. And so, but I hope that is the case for us when we start really taking a spiritual inventory in our lives and our history and God's involvement. We start looking around more closely at what's going on in our lives, that we'll see not a bunch of pimples, but we'll see God's hand at work more than we could ever dream of in our lives. So I want to share a little angel story from you. And it's not one of the ones that was up on the screen. Like I said, I left out several of the Christmas miracle stories that the Bible talks about. There's lots of them. Now, when you picture an angel, though, how do you picture, just so you know, I want you to really picture the right kind of angel here. It's the angel Gabriel, but I think a lot of times in the artwork we see, we see these like cute little fluffy cartoon angels, and these angels weren't like that. These angels were tough guys. I mean, these angels were God's warriors that took on spiritual powers. And, so I think that's probably a more accurate reflection of the kind of being and person that showed up in these miraculous situations and these revelations from God. And so I want you to picture this kind of angel as we get into the story. It's a fun little story about a miraculous event, but the guy in it, every time I read the story, I just go, man, what an idiot. What a moron is this guy in this story. But then it always hits me when I get done with the story. It's like, man, I am that same moron. I would have done the exact same thing. Anyway, let me dive into Luke chapter 1. And we'll look at somebody that dared to doubt such an incredible experience from God. But I wonder, even in that situation, what would I have done? Well, in the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. This is really important stuff if you're into the whole priesthood lineages and all that kind of stuff. And Luke wanted to make sure his audience knew that Zechariah was a legit priest. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commandments and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive. And they were both very old. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty, because there were several divisions of priests and they all had different shifts that they would take to make sure all the work in the temple was done 24 hours, a day, 7 days a week, that the flames were kept going and everything was taken care of, and it's a lot that they had to do. So they had round the clock shifts working in the temple, and 2 weeks out of the year, it's kind of like Army Reserves. You go and you spend the whole time working at the temple. And so Zechariah was on duty, his division was on duty, and he was serving as a priest before God. He was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. That was one of the jobs that you had to make sure that incense was always burning in the holy place of the temple. Could never take a break. It represented God's presence that never takes a break. It's always there. He's always with us, always present, always alive. And so that flame always had to be kept burning. And when the time for the burning of the incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. And then bam, an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. So this is the room in the middle of the temple he was in. So he'd come through the entrance curtain right here. In the middle was that altar of that flame going on. And this is a table that had special bread. And so it represented God's provision for his people. So there always had to be bread. And there was the Jewish menorah. The candles there that also always had to be kept lit. And so it says that this angel is standing right there, right when Zechariah walked in, bam, there's this angel standing where nobody was expected to be. Nobody's allowed to go in there unless you're the priest, that your name came up when they drew lots, because that's how they knew that it was God's will for the particular priest that God wanted in there at that particular time. The lot fell to Zechariah. Nobody else would have been in there. So we're just completely shocked then to see anybody. By the way, nobody got to go in this room back here. This place is called the Holy Place. This place is called the Holy of Holies. And that's where the Ark of the Covenant was. Remember Indiana Jones? Remember the treasure chest? The Ark of the Covenant was, in real life, kept in that room, and only the high turns up, you're just struck down dead. Remember the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and he didn't want that to happen. And so the fact they would even tie a rope onto the guy for in case he died or had a heart attack or something didn't go right, they wouldn't have to go in and get him, they could just drag him back out. And so that's how big of a deal it was. So Zachariah goes in, and this angel is right in his face. And the angel said to him, "Don't be afraid, Zach. It's cool. It's just me. Just an angel here. Your prayer has been heard." So this is something Zachariah obviously had been praying about probably for a very long time. Probably the whole time he had been married to Elizabeth. "Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth." So this is the story about Jesus' cousin, John, who was not only born before him, but his destiny was to come and make everybody ready for Jesus. So John has a miracle story himself. "He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or any other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." That was John the Baptist's mission in life, was to get people ready for Jesus. Then Zechariah asked the angel, okay, famous last words here. Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I am old. I'm an old man, and my wife is well along in years." Zach, did you miss the part about the angel showing up? And so, you know, it's like, I think he got this look back. And so this was the stare back that Zechariah probably got. So again, it wasn't one of those cute, fluffy, cherub-looking angels. These are tough guy angels. This is, listen how the angel himself describes it. The angel said to him, "Listen, pal, maybe you don't know who I am. Let me explain it to you. I am Gabriel. Gabriel, I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time." And so, you know, mental note, anytime an angel reveals something to you, just go with it. Okay? All right? So a little advice there. Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. When he came out, couldn't speak. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them, but remained unable to speak. When the time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant, just like the angel said, and for 5 months remained in seclusion. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people, because in the olden days that was extra hard on moms to deal with. When it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared her joy. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father, Zach Jr. But his mother spoke up and said, "No, no, no. He's to be called John." And they said to her, "John? There's no John. Where are you getting John from? There's no John among your relatives. Where are you getting that?" I mean, the tradition was to name a kid after the father, the grandfather, somebody, an uncle. Then they made signs to his father to find out what he would like to name the child. He asked for a writing tablet. Smart, write it down. And to everyone's astonishment, he wrote, "His name is John." Immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue set free, and he began to speak, praising God. All the neighbors were filled with awe. Throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about all these things. Everyone who heard this wondered about it, asking, "What then is this child going to be?"
And I think all of us parents, you know, felt that experience of awe, that just that miracle of having a little one, and wondered, what is this child going to be? What plans does God have for this little one? For the Lord's hand was with him. So how do you feel? How do you feel about Zechariah? You feel like total moron, or like, oh man, that probably would have been me. I probably would have been just wanting a little more proof, a little something. You know, it's like, how can I be sure? Give me a little something extra. It's like I just showed up from the presence of God. I stand in the presence of God in heaven. Isn't that enough for you? Okay, how's this for a sign? You're going to just be, yeah, you won't be asking too many favors for next 9 months. But it's hard. It's hard to believe in the supernatural and that God's going to do something way out of the ordinary. And what makes it so hard? You know, I don't know if you can read that. That's my old pal right there. I get him. And I can be that half-empty perspective in life. You know, it's like, I don't know if I want to get my hopes up. That could be just too good to be true. And sometimes we're just scared of being disappointed, getting our hopes up. It's tough. Let's be honest. And it's like, does God, would he do that for me? Does he care enough for me? I mean, does that still happen? Hear too much about it? Is it happening in other people's lives? Okay, I can kind of believe that it happened back then because those were the special Bible days, you know, and special stuff happened. But are we still in the special Bible days? Or did that run out? And so how do we get our confidence level up? How do we learn to believe more? You know, and it's hard in our culture. It's kind of funny. We say we do, but then do we really? And this is interesting. A recent survey revealed that 79%, I mean, the vast majority of people in our country say they believe in miracles. I mean, that's encouraging. Even among those who seldom or never attend church, 70% believe miracles occur. Nearly everyone has a personal story. Maybe that has something to do with it. Which he or she considers to be miraculous, but our scientific worldview makes it difficult to tell our stories to each other. It's like, nobody's going to believe that. Nobody's going to feel that the way I felt. They're going to just think I'm crazy. It's like, and did that really happen? Am I crazy? You know, it's like, you know, maybe there was some other better explanation. No, there was no way. That really happened. I know it did. But we're scared to share it with each other because I think we're weird, you know, or they're not going to feel the special way about it that we feel. And so we keep these supernatural things to ourselves. Meanwhile, God is alive and active in incredible ways, so much so that the majority of our country, even in our very secular country, are feeling God at work. And so where are we? Where are you? And what would be helpful? What would help you to believe in miracles? And you're probably wondering, what in the world is that about? Okay, let me tell you this little story. Because this helped me. This story I want to share with you. Because before this, I've experienced God in some pretty amazing ways. But this was kind of like, wow. Does God really do this kind of stuff? And so I couldn't find, well, I could, but I just didn't want to show a couple pictures of two softball-sized cysts on the uterus because it just isn't that good. So anyway, the two softballs would remind me of this story of this young woman who was in my youth group years ago, one of the high school kids in the youth group, before your time. And her doctor, it was on the scans and everything, told her that she was going to have an operation that would possibly lead to her not having to have kids, being able to have kids in her future because of these two softball-sized cysts that needed to be removed. And he could take them out,
You know, they do that all the time, but that was a major risk of the surgery, but they need to come out. And so she shared that with me. She shared it with the youth group. And the night before she was going, we just kind of gathered around her and laid hands on her and prayed for her. And I remember the kids that were there. I remember the prayers and just the hearts of faith and just the, the desire, the hope, the belief that God shows up and would do a miracle. But I'll confess to you, their old youth pastor, you know, that said the amen that night, it wasn't 100% there. It's like, as much faith as I could muster, but it wasn't like the faith of those kids. But I tell you, when that doctor, I remember meeting with the family that next morning at the hospital and kind of, you know, praying again, and she went in, and then when the doctors came out, and they're just like, do we get the wrong kid? I mean, they were just gone. I mean, they were just gone. I mean, they were just gone. You know, and I mean, I'm kind of a skeptic by nature. I remember going, you know, in my mind, because I didn't want to be the damper on the family situation. You know, it's like, I want to be all, are you sure? Did you check? Should I go check? I don't want to have a personal check. We checked. We know it. And just this amazing story. It's like it happens. God does the miraculous. Well, so many stories that, you know, since then, as I've opened myself up to really believing that God can and does do these things. But I want to share a story that you're probably going to hear more and more about this next coming year, because I want to go see this movie that they made about this kid. Where's our little remote? Oh, thanks. But Annabelle Bean, little girl, and this is all in this video I want to show you, but just because sometimes it pops a little fast, just want to give you a little heads up. She was diagnosed when she was around 4 years old with two, not just one. I don't think I could handle one of my kids and myself with one incurable disease, but two incurable diseases where she wasn't able to eat. She had to constantly hope to get her nutrients through tubes because of her abdominal blockages that were inoperable, incurable, and I can't even pronounce the words of the disease. But one day, as she's a little older, she's, I think, 11 or 12, 10 or 11, her sisters, it was a day where she could actually walk around a little bit. She was off the couch, and her, can I even hold her sisters? She got her to go tree climbing with them. And so, she's up in this tree. You see this knot right there, where a branch had fallen before? So one of the branches is kind of loose, and I say, oh, Annabelle, quick, get in there, you'll be safe. That's better than being on all three of us being on this branch that's starting to crack. Well, little did anybody know, this tree has been hollow, and little Annabelle falls 30 feet head first down this tree. And I think I'll let that video speak for itself.
She was diagnosed with two incurable digestive disorders.
Being sick was pretty awful.
Annabelle was always struggling. She always hurt.
Rose and survived from IVs, feeding me, nutrition.
The day Annabelle fell in the tree, we had just come back from Boston. It had been such a very dramatic trip, and that's when Annabelle had said that she wanted to die and go to heaven and live with Jesus where there's no more pain. And then Annabelle was having, you know, a very typical day, but she was encouraged by her sister strongly to go out and play, and that gave me some happiness that she decided to go out and play that day. I got to the tree and I kept saying, where is Annabelle? And they pointed to the base of the tree and said, she's in the tree. And then they pulled me over to the hole that she had fallen through 30 feet in the air, and then reality hit.
I remember that I hit my head 3 times on the way down.
Annabelle described heaven as just peaceful, and she said there was no pain there.
The first thing I actually saw was my nanny, who had died a couple years back, and that's how I knew I was in heaven. It was really, really bright, and I sat on Jesus' lap, and it was kind of like being suspended above the universe.
And she talked to him about wanting to stay with him because there was no pain. And that's when he told her that she would go back. As much as he loves her more than I love her, which I can't comprehend, he gave her back.
I asked him if I could stay, and he said, "No, Annabelle, I have plans for you on earth that you cannot fulfill in heaven."
When Annabelle first told me that she had gone to heaven, she wasn't forcing me to believe it. It just, these were the facts. This is what happened.
It was wider than it was before. And so I was, but it was at night, so that didn't make sense. And that's whenever I realized the guardian angel was with me. And he told me, "I'm going to send a guardian angel with you to light the tree." The angel was mostly like a little fairy and then just light all around her.
The rescue workers needed to do in order to get Annabelle out was, they were brilliant, and they rigged a system of pulleys.
I was in the tree, it was muddy, and I was like trying to crawl my way out.
The firefighters kept saying that she was not hysterical, she was never crying, she never asked for her mommy. In all that they asked her to do, she was such a huge role in her own rescue. The doctors, I remember them saying that they have never had anybody fall 30 feet head first and not suffer paralysis or broken bones. Annabelle being sick and being healed, and it has strengthened our family.
I had always been faithful to him, and I had always hoped he would heal me. My life has changed so much because now I can run and play, kind of make up for what I missed before.
The whole purpose for writing Miracles from Heaven and sharing our story was because it is such a message of hope and encouragement. Just the experience that God is real, and it helps us to establish, again, that hope and that encouragement that we need.
I hope people learn that He's always faithful to you, and no matter how bad things get, He's always with you, whether it's an illness or a loved one or grieving or whatever you're going through in your life. Just stay true to God and you can get through it.
I know. Now, there's a few different interviews with her that I came across, and the only thing that God left out here that's a really key thing that when you read, you know, more about what she talks about what Jesus told her in that time with Him. He said, "You're going back. I have much more for you to do, but you're not going to be sick anymore." So that didn't come through real clear in this particular video, but this was, you know, just because of time, one of the better ones. And so that is the true miracle of this story. You know, Jesus said, "You're not going to have this pain and sickness anymore." And in one of the interviews, she was talking about how the night before she had fettuccine, you know, which she can't, you know, could remember what any of that had tasted like for so long because of the way that she was hooked up to tubes and she couldn't have regular food. Now she's perfectly, perfectly healthy. Miracles still happen. Miracles do happen. You know, there's another story in the Bible about a little girl. And this is, you know, especially tough for those of us that have daughters. You know, and this is one that I've always been very attached to. But Jesus is going along, you know, making His way through the crowds, and everybody wants some time, of course. Everybody's drawn to Him. And this is the story where a woman reaches out and touches Him and is healed from this lifelong sickness that she's been experiencing. But in the meantime, He was on His way to a man's house whose daughter was dying. But because of all the traffic He got caught up in this episode with this gal who was embarrassed to say that it was her that touched Him, but because of her faith and just
and just who Jesus was, his power went out from him. Anyway, Jesus gets caught in this traffic of healing others. And then by the time he gets to this man's house, everyone is saying the girl is too late. The girl is gone. And everybody just gives up hope. Even though so much had been going on right before their eyes in their town. And the look on the father's face was, his hope had fallen. Maybe if Jesus had gotten there a little quicker, it would be another story, but now this would just be too much. And Jesus says these words to him that I think we all need to hear when it comes to learning how to believe. Because I think so much of what keeps us from drawing closer into God and trusting Him and believing at this level, it's our fear. And I totally get that. I'm scared it's not going to turn out and my hopes are going to be disappointed. Because we do live in a very sad, fallen world where we see death and disease all the time. But if we can just now learn to see the miraculous in everything. I mean, just to know, just when I hear Annabelle's story, and to hear that, a kid is going to be saved from feeling any pain in this kind of an accident and immediately be in the presence on the lap of Jesus. And in such joy and happiness that she doesn't even want to go back to her family. I mean, that just gives me a peace because of that miracle itself. That no matter what happens to any of my kids, a miracle will always take place. Because I want to be like Einstein. I want to see a miracle in everything. I want to live in a world where I see the miraculous everywhere. I want to overcome my fears because I know God is active and real and working through every little detail. Don't be afraid. Just believe. I wish I would have made t-shirts for everybody and just handed those out today. Don't be afraid. Just believe. But it's tough. And we can't tease Zacharias. And we can't feel that we're better than Jairus, the father of that girl in the New Testament story. Because it can be hard. But here's what I think will help. I think as we talk about miracles this month and we celebrate the miracles of the Christmas story, we need to celebrate each other's stories. And so I'm putting this invitation out. I've already got a couple from people that I mentioned I was going to do this. But I want to hear, we want to hear, your miracle stories. Whatever they are. Little, small, they're all big. And they're all real. And so you can do this any way you want. You can email me and I'll share it anonymously. Or I'll say it's from, this particular person. Or you can come up and share it yourself, which would love for you to do. That's what we're going to be talking about in December. And so something that would really be a thrill is to hear the miracles in our church family that God has done. And if you haven't experienced a miracle, what that really means is you haven't noticed the miracle. Maybe it'll help you to notice the miracles better by hearing these stories from each other. And I've got a few to tell. That's a little hint. Maybe one that's upcoming from something we experienced recently. So send me an email and let's celebrate those miracles so that we can get better at living in a way where we see and feel God's hand and His power at work, and we're better witnesses to the miracles that's going on all the time around us. And so as Ryan comes back up leads us in some more worship. And this we joke about this, and it surprises me every time. And I was joking with Ryan again. I don't know why. I never get used to it. But we never plan out. We like I said, I'll give Ryan a
basic topic, this is what we're doing, but when he sent me the songs, and I saw this next song, and I realized that verse, you know, that God put on my heart to share with you. Again, it's like, man, how does he do all these little things? And so you'll see that in a second. But don't be afraid and just believe. And as we come to the Lord's table, as we do every week,